Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, February 4th, 2022. Fatigue growing over road projects. Engineering official says Midland planning to stagger construction, by Stuart Doreen. Count Jose Ortiz, among the Midlanders who are wary of the considerable amount of road construction taking place inside the city, and he's director of engineering for the city of Midland. There are a lot of traffic signs, orange cones, and constant reminders that Midland is under construction. It's enough to know that another road improvement program can wait. There are engineering department priorities for City Hall and the Midland City Council. They start with the completion of the road bond. That will be delayed as the city approaches the finish line. There is the reconstruction of Garfield, a 12 to 18 month project, and Main Street. The latter program will have to wait. The Texas Department of Transportation told the city of its intention to repave Big Spring Street, State Highway 349, through Midland from Interstate 20 to Loop 250, Ortiz said. Potentially having Main Street, Big Spring Street, and Garfield Street under construction at the same time is a non-starter. Ortiz knows that Midlanders needed the $100 million road bond when voters passed a pair of propositions in November 2017. Such a large percentage of the roads inside the city were in such poor condition. Even today, the 26 streets that the road bond has or will reconstruct are a small percentage of the total amount of work that needs to be done. Could another round of road rehab take place? Ortiz said sure. But 2024 is when he would even consider a larger-scale project. He noted that does not necessarily mean another bond referendum. Ortiz said Midland was impacted by location as anything else. Many of the projects have taken place in or close to the center of town. The old age of the roads finally caught up with city leaders. Old Midland turned into the epicenter of construction, Ortiz noted. Midland's center is dense when it comes to population, and its roads are touched by so many vehicles going downtown or to Midland Memorial Hospital. Midland is not like a suburb of a larger city whose growth is aided by building of new roads where none exist. The process in Midland requires tearing up roads, fixing utilities, and then building the new roads. Few people remember that only 60% of the road bond went to pavement removal and reconstruction. The city noted in the road bond campaign that 24.4% was set to be devoted to utility line replacement and 10.4% devoted to Americans with Disabilities ADA compliance modifications. This led to projects becoming a process, which also created issues for completing projects as efficiently as some residents would have liked. Ortiz mentioned that a common complaint was that a person might drive by a project and not see anyone at the site. One reason for this, he said, was the staggered starts needed because the utilities needed to be done first, then the concrete work or paving. A second reason was that the state has increased its investment in road funding in the region. There were more projects for the same number of construction companies. Compounding this issue was the sheer amount of work taking place in a relatively short period of time. I have often heard, why does the city start a project and not finish it before starting a new project? Ortiz said. The city manages and maintains around 650 linear miles of asphalt. We don't have the luxury of finishing one before starting another. Still, the city is on pace of completing around 24 road bond projects in a five-year period of time. That is quite an accomplishment, Ortiz noted. And because of the age and construction of older roads are still an issue, as the growth that will require construction in the Northeast and West Midland, the city will not be able to stop. Ortiz said, "We do plan on pulling back on the throttle, instead of having four or five going on at the same time, we might have to cut it back to three and space them out so they are not so concentrated. TxDOT to rehab entirety of Big Spring. Main feeder street into downtown to undergo road work by Stuart Doreen. The Texas Department of Transportation is working on plans to rehab State Highway 349 inside Midland. That main thoroughfare is also known as Big Spring Street to the north and Rankin Highway to the south. Tentatively scheduled to open bids in December, TxDOT spokesman Gene Powell said of the project, rehab will start in spring 2023. The rehab will go from Interstate 20 in the south to Loop 250. That means the main feeder street heading into downtown from the north and south and main thoroughfare inside downtown will be under construction at some point. The scheduling will impact the city, which has decided to delay the reconstruction of Main Street north of downtown because Midland could not afford to possibly have so many north-south corridors under construction at the same time. Ortiz said it is expected that construction on North A Street will have just wrapped up by spring 2023, but Garfield's rehab, a 12 to 18-month project, will still be underway. The project may bring awareness that there are roads inside Midland that are not city roads, but under the care of the state. Big Spring and Rankin Highway, also known as Business State Highway 349. Other state roads include Loop 250, part of Midland Drive, between Andrews Highway and Loop 250 to the north, and Andrews Highway, Business State Highway 158. The state also handles the maintenance and expansion of Interstate 20 and Business Interstate 20, known to many as Wall Street to the west and Front Street to the east. Recently, the state and city have partnered to get some projects done quicker. Midland Development Corporation funding helped bring a couple of interchange projects at County Road 1150 and County Road 60 on the eastern part of Loop 250 to fruition. The state is putting so many dollars into the region, Ortiz said. And Big Spring Street, or Rankin Highway, or Business 349, to the list. That is another impactful road project for a city that has had its fair share already. Winter Storm Landon. Officials say weatherization holding up during freeze. TXOGA president says there's ample natural gas in the marketplace. By Mella McEwen. Last February, Winter Storm Uri walloped Texas with more than 220 hours of sub-freezing temperatures, snow, and ice that nearly buckled the state's power grid. This year, it's Winter Storm Landon's turn, but indications are the state's power grid is taking the icy blast in stride. Concerns about the state's power grid have risen since late February, and officials are working to assure Texans that the grid is in good shape. The Texas Oil and Gas Association held a media briefing on the weather situation for the media Thursday to discuss the state's natural gas supplies that help power the grid. We know with the inclement weather, there's a lot of concern about the stat and the people, and we wanted to provide you that information, explained Todd Staples, TXOGA president. During the telephone briefing, Staples said the state's anticipated onshore daily production is more than 22 billion cubic feet. Combined with more than 17 billion cubic feet a day of storage capacity withdrawal, he said that far exceeds total Texas demand. In addition, he said Railroad Commission figures indicate 544 BCF of natural gas in working storage, or about 125 times normal daily usage by power generators. There remains ample opportunity to purchase natural gas in the marketplace, he said. Staples cited figures from S&P Global Platts that said daily production is averaging 1.5 billion cubic feet, or almost 7% more than in 2021. The consulting group estimates Texas onshore production of 23.44 billion cubic feet on Wednesday and 22.21 BCF on Thursday for an anticipated dip of about 5%. He stressed such a dip is within normal operational expectations and could be attributed to factors ranging from temporary loss of power, high winds, or icy roads that are expected to worsen throughout the storm and prevent crews from getting to sites. There could also be mechanical issues, he said. Staples pointed out that daily production fluctuates even when conditions are perfect. Ben Shepherd, president of the Permian Basin Petroleum Association, told the Reporter-Telegram by email that his staff has been communicating with members who are reporting very few weather-related problems. He said there have been a few localized outages, but none related to the power grid. Other issues have involved road conditions, and he said the staff has been communicating with the Texas Department of Transportation, which is addressing road conditions. Any power outages will likely be localized and caused by ice accumulations that cause trees to fall or hang on to power lines. In the aftermath of last year's storm, operators have spent hundreds of millions of dollars on weatherization on their facilities, as required by laws passed last year. Those methods include methanol injection, temperature-activated pumps, steamer units, equipment shelters, and insulated critical lines and valves. Thousands of natural gas facilities have been designated as critical infrastructure, as required by the Railroad Commission, which Staple said has conducted on-site winterization inspections of more than 4,000 facilities. In anticipation of the winter storm, operators have pre-positioned personnel closer to sites, securing shelter or housing for them, secured additional methanol and other supplies on trucks, and prepared and drained tanks to increase on-site storage and provide temporary buffers for necessary third-party movement of product. They have also line-packed pipelines, filling them with product to ensure availability of product and pressure to move production to the end users. The lack of volatility in natural gas prices is a signal the market is confident the system is working and production is flowing to where it needs to be, Staples said. The Electric Reliability Council of Texas is reporting it should have in excess of 10,000 megawatts of capacity available when peak demand arrives, which is expected to be in the morning hours Friday. MPD Seeking Tips on Theft Suspects by Mercedes Cordero. The Midland Police Department is searching for two theft subjects. On December 15th and January 19th, the suspects stole more than $8,000 from Best Buy, according to the Midland Police Facebook page. The suspects are described as a Hispanic male and female, last seen driving a forest green Jeep Cherokee. If you have any information on who these suspects are, please call the MPD non-emergency line at 432-685-7108 or Midland Crime Stoppers at 694-TIPS in reference to MPD case number 22011-9020. Twists bring intrigue to MCT's Cinderella, from staff reports. The classic fairy tale, Cinderella, comes to life on the Davis Theater One stage at Midland Community Theater, 2000 West Wadley Avenue. The show marks the theater's return to large-scale musicals for the first time since February 2020. Cinderella opens Friday and continues Fridays and Saturdays throughout the month. The musical is the fourth incarnation of Rodgers and Hammerstein's Golden Age musical and offers some fresh perspectives on the classic fairy tale, according to MCT. While the same beloved songs are part of this version, the script has replaced a few characters and adjusted the arcs of others to provide more depth and intrigue for the audience. It was these new changes and updates that attracted Executive Director Tim Jebsen to the prospect of bringing it to the Permian Basin. "I first saw this new version in Salt Lake City in the summer of 2019, Jebsen said. "There were major changes to the characters and the story that revitalized the production. All in all, it's the best of both worlds, something we're familiar with, but something that's brand new." This show is costumer Crystal Wilkerson-Diaz's first princess show. The costumes were a major undertaking, and thanks to a generous sponsor in the form of Mr. S. Javed Anwar and Midland Energy Incorporated, Wilkerson-Diaz was able to travel all the way to the Fabric District in New York City to get the materials she needed. For tickets and showtimes, visit www.mctmidland.org or call the MCT box office at 432-570-4111.
This is Reed, and this is the Odessa American for Friday, February 4th, 2022. Ice cold takes toll on Odessa. The first real taste of winter weather in Odessa didn't leave nearly as many upsets as last year's big storm. About an inch of snow fell overnight Wednesday, leaving roads icy and leading to all schools in Odessa closing to in-person learning. The cold will continue today, and temps dipped as low as 17 in Odessa on Thursday. Today's low is expected to be 17 with a high of 41. Gene Powell, the spokesman for TxDOT's Odessa District, said nothing unexpected has arisen from the winter storm. He said crews will continue to lay down granular material throughout the district. Quote, "We've been addressing trouble spots and looking for places that need granular material," end quote, Powell said. Quote, "We are trying to break up any ice that is formed. We can't be everywhere. People need to slow down and behave," end quote. A Facebook post from the Odessa Police Department detailed that there have been 17 minor collisions and 3 major collisions that happened between 5 p.m. Wednesday and 9 a.m. Thursday. Monica Quintero, the public relations manager for the Odessa Police Department, reported OPD hasn't added more officers to the street as collision numbers are low. However, she also stated OPD has the ability to add additional officers on the street quickly if conditions change. Victor County Sheriff Mike Griffiths said only one person used the West Annex located at 2261 West Sycamore Drive as of Thursday morning. Griffiths said the person requested to go home earlier Thursday morning. He said a deputy was standing by in case anyone else needed to use the West Annex as a warming shelter. Griffiths also said as of Thursday morning, deputies have responded to 5 winter weather collisions. The Texas Department of Public Safety detailed in an email, the DPS Midland District is reporting a total of 6 traffic crashes from midnight to 2 p.m. Thursday. As of 5 a.m. Thursday, 30,000 Encore customers are without power. A press release from Encore detailed, a majority of those outages, about 24,000, were in the Dallas metro area and adjacent north and northeast counties. The storm has also impacted the northern and western regions of Encore's service area, with 5,000 outages near the Red River and 1,000 in the Permian Basin. Encore's outage map showed 12 customers in West Odessa as of 3 p.m. Thursday afternoon. 5 of the 12 customers' restoration time was expected to return in less than 2 hours. UTPB and Odessa College each stated classes will meet virtually today. A City of Odessa press release stated city offices would delay opening till 10 a.m. today. Ector County offices will open 2 hours late. The Texas Military Department Public Affairs issued a press release on Thursday afternoon that detailed numerous service members and tactical vehicles have mobilized in support of the state's winter storm response. Service members are poised to provide support in Texas cities threatened by extreme winter conditions. Working in support of the Texas Division of Emergency Management and in collaboration with the Texas Department of Public Safety, Texas Guardsmen are providing assistance to first responders as needed. IHOP to raise funds for Miracle Network. IHOP is partnering with Medical Center Health System to raise funds Children's Miracle Network. From now through March 1st, CMN balloons can be purchased at IHOP locations in Midland and Odessa. Guests can also leave a cash contribution, add a donation to their bill, or donate while ordering through IHOP National Pancake Day on March 1st. 100% of donations will go toward the NICU, Neonatal Intensive Care Unit, and pediatric units at MCHS to purchase life-saving equipment, training for clinical staff, and charitable care for patients and their families. Since 2006, IHOP has raised more than $22,000 for CMN at MCHS. Robotics Competition Set. University of Texas Permian Basin will host the 2022 Robotics South League Championship from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. Saturday on the UTPB basketball court. Admission is free. They are expecting a total of 38 teams and more than 200 attendees, students, instructors, parents, a news release stated. Weather doesn't stop Citizen of the Year event. Odessa Regional Medical Center and Medical Center Hospital may be rivals at times, but throughout the pandemic, they have joined forces to try and help the citizens of Odessa and the Permian Basin battle COVID. Their work and cooperation together earned them the Odessa Chamber of Commerce's Citizens of the Year Award for 2021, as the professional healthcare workers from both hospitals were honored at a luncheon Thursday at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center. Despite the inclement weather, the event was able to still be held, as members of the Chamber of Commerce were able to come together and recognize the tireless efforts of the healthcare workers from both ORMC and MCH. Quote, "Well, today is a perfect example," end quote, Odessa Chamber of Commerce President and CEO Renee Earle said. Quote, "We dropped snow and Mother Nature blankets our community, but hospitals can't close. They can't close when the weather gets bad. People get sick regardless, and that's another example of how healthcare workers step up and do what they need to do in spite of all the obstacles. I'm so pleased that we're able to honor these healthcare workers and all that they do each and every single day," end quote. Odessa Regional Medical Center President Stacy Brown said it was an honor for her and her workers to be recognized, and said that it spoke volumes of support that the two hospitals and healthcare workers get from the community. Quote, "Obviously, it's been a very difficult 2 years," end quote, Brown said. Quote, "I don't think that anyone thought that we would be in this situation 2 years down the road. I think each time we go through these surges, it gets harder on our staff. So for the Odessa Chamber to recognize the healthcare workers for all their contributions and all their sacrifices, it's incredible, and I'm so grateful for their efforts in doing that," end quote. President and CEO of Medical Center Hospital, Russell Tippin, echoed those thoughts. Quote, "I think this is a big honor," end quote, Tippin said. Quote, "You look at the names on this list, and to know that the Medical Center family and ORMC are going to be tied to this list forever is very awesome, and that it's a big honor, and we're very appreciative of the recognition," end quote. Despite being two different hospitals, Brown talked about efforts both ORMC and MCH have put in during the pandemic to take care of the community and what it means for them to come together. Quote, "I think we've seen cooperation between our two hospitals at a level that we've never seen before, and Russell and I are very proud of our ability to come together as one," end quote, Brown said. Quote, "That's the way it should be in any community. We should put our community first and partner our resources together, because we'll always be more effective that way, and we're proud of that," end quote. Because of COVID-19, workers have undergone extreme measures to care for virus-stricken patients, as well as those receiving other types of care and treatments. Quote, "What I think the message is today, when the world was shut down, our employees were there," end quote, Tippin said. Quote, "When the malls and movies closed, all our staff was asked to stand in the gap and take care of sick people. They stood strong, and they were there at the worst time, and I think that's very impressive," end quote. Employees from both hospitals talked about how honored they felt for being recognized for their efforts. Quote, "It's an honor, and it comes at a good time where we're in the second year of a pandemic, and we're starting to see another surge, so it's nice to be honored. We're very appreciative," end quote. Critical care and COVID director at ORMC, Danae Sims, said. Rosa Salas, the MCH Nutrition Service Department supervisor, said she's proud. Quote, "This day, I'm very honored to be here. I can't describe it. I'm honored to be here with the work I do. Not only being an MCH employee, we want to make sure our patients get the satisfaction service. And beside that, sometimes our patients are there for medicine or food, but sometimes they need love or someone to talk to. And that's what I love about my job," end quote. The luncheon began with the welcome delivered by Tatum Hubbard, who was the event's MC. Director of Pastoral Care at MCH, Farrell Ard, delivered the invocation, while Minister of Music at First United Methodist Church, David Corman, sung the national anthem. Odessa Chamber of Commerce Board of Directors Chairman Jimmy Cox also spoke at the event. Quote, MCH and ORMC have done a great job during the COVID pandemic, end quote, Cox said before the luncheon. Quote, we felt it was proper to honor them because of all the great teamwork they've done together and what they've done for the community, end quote. Each year, the Odessa Chamber of Commerce selects a Citizen of the Year who has spent the last 12 months doing extraordinary things to move the community forward. Every year, with the exception of last year, which was not held, the Chamber selects one person, sometimes two people, to be the recipient of the award. This was the first time that an entire group was honored as the Citizens of the Year. Quote, it's always difficult because we get great nominations, end quote, Cox said. Quote, there were some great nominations this year, but we just thought outside the box with what's been going on since we didn't get to honor anybody last year because of everything that happened. Someone came up with the idea that let's do something different and honor the healthcare professionals since they've done a great job, end quote. West Texas Safari Club donates to Scholarship Endowment at BRI. The West Texas Chapter of Safari Club International has made a $5,000 donation to support an endowed scholarship at the Borderlands Research Institute, BRI, at Sul Ross State University. The endowment was set up by the West Texas Chapter in 2014 and has been supporting students ever since. This year's scholarship recipients are graduate students Daniel Wilcox and Olivia Gray. Wilcox's thesis project is investigating the impact of Aoudad expansion into native bighorn and mule deer range. Gray is studying the dietary overlap of Aoudad desert bighorn sheep and mule deer in the Trans-Pecos. Quote, the West Texas Chapter of Safari Club International aims to keep a large portion of the funds we raise for local use, end quote, Board President of the West Texas Chapter of Safari Club International, Brandon Bredemeyer, said. Quote, it makes sense for us to invest in the education of future conservation scientists whose research benefits projects where we live, work, and enjoy the outdoors. We see it as an investment in our future that will benefit future generations of outdoor enthusiasts, end quote. The West Texas Chapter has donated more than $300,000 to Borderlands Research Institute over the last 15 years, supporting a variety of research projects along with the endowed scholarships. Quote, we are incredibly grateful for the longstanding support of the West Texas Chapter, end quote. Lewis Harbison, who is the Dan Allen Hughes Jr., BRI Endowed Director and Professor of Wildlife Management at Sul Ross State University, said. Quote, the scholarship endowment will be supporting future conservation professionals for years to come, end quote. Obituaries. Gayla and James Sanders, Odessa. Gayla Lynn Sanders, 56, of Odessa, Texas, went to be with her Lord and Savior on January 7, 2022. Just 13 days later, her husband, James Donald Sanders, 62, of Odessa, Texas, earned his angel wings on January 20, 2022. Memorial services will be held at 11 o'clock a.m. Saturday, February 5th, 2022, at Mission Dorado Baptist Church in Odessa, Texas, with a lunch provided by the church directly after. Pastor Jonathan Coleman will officiate. Gayla was born on March 15, 1965, to Joseph and Elaine Hare, and was raised by her loving second father, Bob Bell, and mother, Elaine. James was born on May 26, 1959, to B.J. and Wilma Sanders in Seminole, Texas. Gayla is preceded in death by both fathers, Joseph Hare and Bob Bell. James is preceded in death by both of his parents, B.J. and Wilma Sanders, his oldest sister, Jeanette Weddle, and less than 2 weeks earlier, his loving wife, Gayla Sanders. They are survived by their son and daughter-in-law, Alan and Dusty Sanders. Gayla's sister, Elisa Harden, brothers and sisters-in-law, Roger and Karen Bell, Randy and Joanne Bell, and her mother, Elaine Bell. James' two sisters, Donna Sanders and Carol Parker, grandsons Nicholas and Ryan, and several nieces, nephews, great-nephews, and their fur babies, Harley and Baxter. Memorials / donations may be given to Mission Dorado Baptist Church, 4142 Faudry Road, Odessa, Texas, 79765. The family wishes to extend our sincere thanks to the staff at Medical Center Hospital and Mission Dorado Baptist Church. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. To send condolences to the family, please sign their guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Death notices. Benito Cabezuela Carrasco, Odessa. Benito Cabazuela Carrasco, 52, of Odessa, died Saturday, January 29th, 2022, in Odessa. Mass will be celebrated at 10 a.m. on Tuesday, February 8th, 2022, at St. Elizabeth Ann Seton Catholic Church. The family will receive friends for visitation on Monday, February 7th, 2022, from 1 to 7 p.m. at Odessa Funeral Home. The rosary will be at St. Mary's Gymnasium at 7:30 p.m. Arrangements are by Odessa Funeral Home of Odessa. Thurman Raymond Crutchfield, Midland. Thurman Raymond Crutchfield, 77, of Odessa, died Sunday, January 23, 2022, in Midland. Services will be scheduled at a later date. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Jesus Natero, Odessa. Jesus Natero, 90, of Odessa, died Tuesday, February 1, 2022, in Odessa. Mass will be celebrated at 2 p.m. February 5, 2022, at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Burial will take place at a later date in Valle Nuevo, Mexico. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Lucien Rudd, Jr., Midland. Lucien Rudd, Jr., 92, of Midland, died Monday, January 31, 2022, in Midland. Funeral service will be held at 2 p.m. February 6, 2022, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel in Midland. The family will receive guests from 6 o'clock p.m. to 8 o'clock p.m. Saturday, February 5th, 2022, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Arrangements are by Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Rhonda Faye Skelton, Odessa. Rhonda Faye Skelton, 65, of Odessa, died Sunday, January 30th, 2022, in Odessa. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Nettie Athaly Smith, Odessa. Nettie Athaly Smith, 97, of Odessa, died Saturday, January 22, 2022, in Odessa. Funeral service will be held at 2 p.m. on Saturday, February 5, 2022, at Vine Baptist Church. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are by Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home of Odessa. Julian Chico Vega, Odessa. Julian Chico Vega, 61, of Odessa, died Wednesday, January 12, 2022, in Odessa. Celebration of life will be held at 3:30 p.m. Saturday, February 5, 2022, at Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Sylvia L. Clark, Odessa. Sylvia May LaCour Clark, age 97, peacefully died on January 25, 2022, surrounded by family which she so dearly loved. She was preceded in death by her beloved husband, Hollis, 23 years ago, and continued to marshal through as her seven children continued to grow the family tree. She was born August 22, 1924, in Moreauville, Louisiana, to Joseph Wilfred LaCour and Annette Octavie Marcotte on a small farm. Sylvia is survived by Christina Wright of San Angelo, Texas, Minka and Scott Siebert, Holly and Wayne Perkins, Carmen and Mike Randolph, and LaCour Clark, all of Odessa, Texas, Robin and Ann Clark of Houston, Texas, and Kevin and Carlene Clark of Westminster, Colorado, as well as 16 grandchildren, 22 great-grandchildren, and 2 great-great-grandchildren. The family would be honored that in lieu of flowers, a donation be made to the Alzheimer's Association, St. Elizabeth Ann Seton Building Fund, or Smile Train. A special thanks goes to those who worked so faithfully and diligently helping her in her last year. Maria Garcia, Maxine Sanchez, Crystal Ortiz, and LaShondra Kelly. Jessica Sotelo, Director of Health Care Services with Interim Health Care Hospice, was a special person the last few days of her life also. Sylvia will be interred at a private burial in Odessa, followed by a memorial mass in celebration of life at a later date.
Stress management is vital, especially during a pandemic. This was written by Carol A. Cates, Chief Nursing Officer, Odessa Regional Medical Center. I was so fortunate last week to spend some time with several ECISD current and retired teachers and the Delta Kappa Gamma sorority. We talked about the many changes, the challenges, and current recommendations on the best ways to stay safe as we are having yet another wave in this awful pandemic. One thing we talked about just a little bit was how stressful this is on everyone, not just for those of us in healthcare. I have such admiration for teachers every day, but especially so during this challenging time. They have the incredible challenge of teaching our young people with the career they have chosen, and the last 2 years have had the added burden of changing platforms and not knowing if they're going to be live one day or virtual the next. They also know that every platform change has an almost exponential negative effect on the learning of their kids. The stress on our teachers is incredibly high. It seems like that for everyone I speak to lately, unprecedented stress in their lives. I am constantly amazed at the pervasive damage COVID has caused and continues to cause in everything from empty shelves at the grocery store to how people discuss issues on social media and in person. The stress of the moment with COVID, but also stress of the unknown on where the damage COVID is causing will lead next, affects all of us. Stress that is not dealt with in a productive way can become an accelerating downward spiral of negative outcomes. Out-of-control stress can lead to health issues, mental and emotional distress, and it can negatively affect relationships, all of which cause more stress. That is why it is so important in these trying times to really pay attention to stress management. That way, you can get out of the negative cycle, or better yet, avoid it altogether. Stress is a normal reaction to the demands of life, and in many situations can be a good thing. Stress is hardwired into our brains so we can deal effectively with threats. It is our mental and physical alarm system. For instance, if someone is mugged, that alarm system in the brain speeds up the heart and respiratory rate. It floods the body with hormones like adrenaline that also increase heart rate and increase blood pressure. That increase in heart rate, respiratory rate, and blood pressure makes sure there is an abundance of oxygen available to tissues. Those hormones also trigger a system to move blood away from your digestive system and more toward the muscles and brain. The brain narrows its focus to only that threat. All those things allow you to run from the threat or fight the threat. This alarm system, however, is meant to be a short-term thing. A threat, like a mugger, is generally over quickly. Unfortunately, it's hard for that alarm system to distinguish between the short-term threat of a mugger and the long-term threat of losing a home because of a job loss. The body still reacts the same. The brain still maintains that narrow focus. In the long term, those reactions can cause damage. Physical damage because of the high heart rate and blood pressure, plus the other effects of the hormones coursing through the system, mental and relationship change because of the narrow focus on the threat, other things, often important things, are missed. The Mayo Clinic recommends the first step in stress management is identifying triggers. Think about the things that make you feel angry, tense, worried, or irritable. Look for physical signs too, like headaches or stomach upset with no medical cause. Things like job losses, relationship problems, money problems are easy to identify as stressors, but often it's the small things that add up, like traffic jams, being late to meetings, getting kids to school every day. Even positive things like marriages and engagements, promotions, being able to finally buy something you have been saving for, can add to stress. Once you have identified your triggers, the next step is to identify what you can control with those triggers. For instance, if you have trouble sleeping at night, change your sleep routine with things like eliminating light sources and noise sources. If you can't control things, think about how you are reacting to them. Remember, you don't have to deal with things on your own, and that it's okay to ask for help with overwhelming tasks. Relaxation techniques, exercise, and self-care are also good ways to deal with stress. Finally, speak to your primary health care provider about the stress in your life if techniques like those above aren't helping. It's okay to take medications, speak to a professional counselor, or both. Often, people think that is a sign of weakness, but it's not. The people who find ways to not let things overwhelm them and continue to move forward and support their families and others are those who are strong. Let your primary health care provider help find the best option for you to stay strong in the face of stress during these incredibly challenging times. UTPB official adds new role. The story was written by Ruth Campbell. After more than 3 years with University of Texas Permian Basin, Tanya Lowery has another hat to wear. Having been the chief compliance officer since 2018, she now adds interim chief diversity officer. With respect to the diversity part, Lowery's role will be looking at diversity and inclusion efforts institution-wide and seeing where UTPB can continue to build its diversity and inclusion efforts or tweak them as needed. Quote, "We want to continue to infuse diversity, equity, inclusion, and social justice throughout UTPB. We want to continue to make sure that UTPB remains a welcoming and inclusive environment, and that folks understand the importance of being culturally aware, culturally sensitive, but also understanding you know how that kind of plays into the global world," Lowery said. Continuing the quote, "As you know, we are educating our students to go out and be those change agents, so we want them to be aware and have the best skills possible. But in addition to that, we also want to make sure that our employees as well as our external stakeholders understand the value that we have with relation to diversity and inclusion," she added. Asked what happens if someone doesn't say the right thing or comply, she said it is a two-pronged answer. Quote, "On the official side, if there is an allegation related to discrimination or harassment of a protected category, obviously, we have some mechanisms in place to address that. There would be an investigation, of course, looking into those matters and then remedying the situation. We have to do that, as you know, because we receive federal funds. Federal funds fall underneath Title VI. A little caveat to this is any organization or entity that receives any dime of federal funding, you must ensure that you have a work environment, academic environment, that is free from any type of discrimination and harassment," Lowery said. If someone makes an off-color joke and her office is told of that situation, they would work with their partners in human resources, as well as the people involved, to find out exactly what happened. Quote, "But then you would use that opportunity to address that in an educational manner. Sometimes folks just don't know. So you can help them understand and bridge that gap. In other entities, sometimes some people are just going to do what they want to do, and in that case, we would have to have a conversation about what is acceptable and appropriate," end quote. If the behavior continues, human resources would step in and talk to the employee and suggest that maybe the environment they're in is not right for them. Quote, "But we try not to be punitive because, again, what we want is an environment where everyone feels welcome and feels included. People are going to make mistakes. We understand that. But part of the way that we help mitigate that is we offer opportunities for training. We offer opportunities for folks to come in and have that conversation. And we really try to help people understand. This is probably why you don't want to say things like that. This is how this could be offensive to someone and offer a way to move forward together," Lowery said. Training for staff is online and in person. Departments contact her department and say they would like to have a training session on implicit bias, for example. Quote, and so, per their request, we can do an in-person training, or if it's easier to kind of do it online, we can instruct them and put it underneath our LMS, which is Canvas, our learning management system, Lowry said. She added that UTPB also partners with other UT schools, and if they've got a canned program or training, UTPB can work with them to conduct the training. Quote, it really depends on what the department needs, she said. Lowry said she was recruited from Oklahoma State University, where she served as the Title IX Coordinator or Deputy Equal Opportunity Officer. She earned a bachelor's degree in politics from Marymount College of Tarrytown, New York, now called Marymount College of Fordham, a master's degree in communication from Eastern New Mexico University in Portales, New Mexico, and her doctorate in higher education administration from UT Austin. Diversity and inclusion has been a passion of Lowry's since she started in the workforce. Quote, my dissertation focused in on how the institutions of education make diversity and inclusion really a specific value, and so through all of my positions, I've given trainings on diversity and inclusion and work with different committees. But when Dr. Sandra Woodley asked me to serve as a diversity officer, it was like, oh my gosh, really? Yay. But really, it's a culmination of a lot of hard work over the years, and to get your dream job, it's a fantastic opportunity, Lowry said. President Sandra Woodley said she is thrilled to have Lowry in her new role. Quote, Dr. Lowry comes to this position with a great deal of experience. She is passionate about this work and a true leader on campus. One of her great strengths is helping people feel comfortable talking about uncomfortable things. Our university is diverse with faculty, staff, and students who come from different backgrounds, with different ideologies, and varied life experiences. We have much to learn from each other, and Tanya facilitates this work in a way that is safe and constructive, Woodley said in an email.
This is Jane reading for the Odessa American on Saturday, January 29th. The Texas Higher Education Coordinating Board approves targets to measure progress in building a talent-strong Texas. The Texas Higher Education Coordinating Board gave final approval at its quarterly board meeting to move forward with the state's refreshed plan for higher education titled Building a Talent-Strong Texas. Under the new plan, Texas will connect more students, including more working adults, to college degrees, certificates, and other credentials that offer purpose in the economy, value in the labor market, and opportunities for good jobs and meaningful careers. The plan builds on the previous 60 by 30 Texas plan and is organized around three updated goals with expanding metrics, a news release said. The three goals and corresponding targets include attainment of post-secondary credentials. The new plan expands attainment goals to include all working-age Texans. In doing so, the state will increase employment opportunities and income for individuals, create a deeper talent pool for employers, and align skills with jobs the workforce demands. Post-secondary credentials of value. The new plan intentionally connects degrees, certificates, and other credentials to the typical earnings of graduates. Texas will be the first state to set higher education goals focused on the value of post-secondary credentials for students' earnings, while also considering cost and student loan debt. This emphasis on the value of credentials will help students, employers, and the public be even more confident that credentials from Texas higher institutions will equip graduates for good jobs, continued learning, and lasting, rewarding careers, the release said. research, development, and innovation. As the pace of change in the Texas economy continues to accelerate, the new plan calls for increased investment in research and development, including basic and applied research and translating new discoveries into innovations that drive economic development. This goal emphasizes a key component of how colleges, universities, and employers must work together to advance the state's economic competitiveness for the future. As we work in partnership with the Texas higher education institutions and employers to advance the value of degrees, certificates, and other post-secondary credentials, we must be even more intentionally committed to advancing equity, Commissioner of Higher Education Harrison Keller said in the release. Texas grew more than any other state over the past decade and is one of the youngest and most diverse states in the nation. More than 95% of our growth over the past decade was in communities of color. That means if we're not advancing our goals equitably, we cannot meet our goals. This is Jane reading from the Odessa American for Saturday, January 29th. UTPB sets FAFSA night. University of Texas Permian Basin has set a FAFSA night for 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. February 1st. Campus tours are also planned. The event will be in the Welcome Center entrance, also known as the Enrollment Lobby at the Mesa Building at UTPB. Refreshments are typically available. There will be Spanish speakers available. Admissions Counselor Madeline Green said the free application for federal student aid events have been held for about a year. We've gotten a really good response, she said. Filling out a FAFSA is now a state high school graduation requirement. It's a chance for parents and students to get help filling out the forms. Green spends every Tuesday and Thursday at Permian, and she urges the students to attend the FAFSA nights because it takes 15 to 30 minutes to complete the forms, especially if there is someone from admissions or financial aid representative on hand. Filling out the FAFSA can provide students with funds on top of the scholarship that UTPB awards. And we have Falcon Promise, where if the family makes less than $60,000 a year, then you don't pay a dime in tuition and fees. Whatever you don't get through the federal Pell Grant, we supplement with institutional and state grants, Green said. Along with February 1st, she said FAFSA nights will be held on March 1st, April 5th, and May 3rd at the university. It'll be a monthly FAFSA night, not just to help out the high school kids, but anyone in the community who is looking to get started. We'll have admissions counselor there, as well as financial aid representatives. So if you are trying to figure out if maybe you want to come to UTPB, you could also come to FAFSA night and try and kind of get a preliminary idea of how much things would cost. She noted that you don't necessarily have to be looking to go to college or to UTPB. You could be unsure about whether you want to go and attend a FAFSA night and talk to a financial aid and admissions representative. The number of people who turn out for FAFSA night varies. There were a few times when there was only 2-3 kids, but the last one, the one that was hosted in October, November, that was one of the biggest one we had, she said. It's been a while since the last FAFSA night. The way they had been having them was in cooperation with the high schools. But now we're going to start in the spring having the FAFSA nights at our campus because that opens it up not just to high school kids, but to everyone, Green said. Even though students get into college, they may not always enroll. One of the things that we try to do is keep them engaged throughout the process, where as soon as they're admitted to the point of enrolling, they have an application portal where they can go and look and see who their admissions counselors are. And it will have a picture on there of the admissions counselor. That application portal would help them see what do I need, and we'll send them emails all the time to remind students of what they need, she said. We're kind of pestering them just to, like, kind of keep them engaged and to remind them that there are certain things that need to be turned in before school starts, as well as just keeping an open line of communication with them, Green said. She added that student orientation is one of the biggest factors in sealing the deal because there are fun things to do, such as games and campus tours. New student orientation is mandatory, and so that's how we try to engage them to enroll, she added. New student orientations are held throughout the summer. Once you apply, you have to keep an eye out on your email so that whenever orientation registration opens up, you get to sign up for it and for the date you want. For FAFSAnite, students need to bring their IRS tax form 2020 because it runs 2 years behind. If you don't have IRS tax information, then it's really not possible to complete the FAFSA unless you have special circumstances, Green said. You will also need your Social Security number and those of your family. If you don't have a Social Security number, you can fill out the TASFA, Texas Application for State Financial Aid, and we'll help you fill the TASFA out, she said.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.